Welcome to James Bond Complex. My name's Matt.
I'm Edgar.
And we are a podcast where we cover the entire James Bond phenomenon, from thing to film to everything in between. And today we are doing something that is an in-between, I guess.
It is very much an in-between.
Back with our friends at Dynamite Comics, with the third James Bond story called Hammerhead.
It's actually, if you pay attention closely, it's actually two words that actually operate as their own words that are stuck together. Hammer and head.
Hammerhead.
Hence Hammerhead. Quite clever. I don't know who came up with that.
Since I'm pretty sure you haven't read this book again, you're not doing your own work.
I bought a copy. I have a copy of the beautiful hardcover edition right here on my couch, but I never read it.
I only got the digital copy. I might actually get those hard covers eventually. Actually, this one, I might actually pull the trigger because I actually really enjoyed it. Spoiler. So let's I'll recount the events of Hammerhead. Our story begins in Caracas, capital of Venezuela. James Bond confronts a group of terrorists led by a hacker named Saxon, who is being coerced with a remote-controlled exploding collar by someone called Kraken. In the confrontation, 007 kills all of Saxon's men, but the cyber-terrorist is blown up by Kraken via remote control, thus leaving Bond empty-handed. Following this fiasco, M confronts Bond about his failure to gain any useful information on Kraken, who it seems is targeting Hunt Engineering and Britain's nuclear deterrent program. Bond and Moneypenny briefly discuss Bond's assignment to Dubai, 007 reflecting that he is indeed in the doghouse. 007 attends the IDEX International Defense Exhibition and Conference, where he meets Victoria Hunt, daughter of Hunt Engineering's CEO, Lord Gerard Hunt. Victor proudly shows off the Hammerhead, Hunt's newest weapon, a magnetic railgun, to Bond, while someone in the shadow is watching them. That evening, 007 attends a party hosted by Hunt at the Dubai Aquarium. He has drinks with Victor, where they share their opinions on the downfall of England's influence on the world. Bond blames greed and the overextension of the British Empire, with its many colonies, that it lost during and after two world wars, while Victor blames political appeasement. Eventually, the talk between Victor and James is interrupted by the latter's father, Gerard. The trio exchanges a few pleasantries moments before Lord Hunt is brutally shot and killed by a mysterious assassin. After the attack, Bond and Victor flee the aquarium, but are finally cornered in a glass corridor by the assassin. In a last-ditch effort to save themselves, Bond shoots the aquarium glass and sends the fishes and a shark inside the corridor. In the chaos, Bond grabs the assassin and feeds him to the shark before extracting a single clue from him. One word. Charybdis. Bond identifies the assassin Rando Markov, an Armenian mercenary. Victoria Hunt vows to help Bond hunt and kill her dad's killer before going to bed with 007. Meanwhile, an helicopter is taken down and its content nuclear-warred stolen. Bond tracks down the safe house in Yemen that both terrorists employed by Kraken have used recently. He's forced to kill two mercenaries, but accesses their computer by using the word Charybdis as a password. 007 learns that a smuggler named Karim Malfakar was hired by Kraken to ship something which Bond deduces is the stolen warhead. On his way to meet Malfakar, 007's car is hijacked and attacks him. Thankfully, Bond manages to take down his own supercar with only his wits. The car is still ablaze when he is captured by a group of armed men. Bond and his captor, the smuggler known as Malfakar, discuss the Kraken job. They discover that the object that Kraken once smuggled is a warhead, a nuclear warhead. Bond disassembles the warhead only to discover that it's empty, the nuclear material having been removed. Bond, Malfakar, and his men infiltrate the Bodis, a warship registered to Hunt Engineering. Bond and Malfakar stop the Bodis from firing a nuke, avoiding Malfakar being turned into the ideal fall guy for Kraken, who it turns out is Victoria Hunt herself.
No.
Yes. Meanwhile, M, Moneypenny, and Defense Security Simon Willis arrive at Blackernog, a nuclear reprocessing facility. Too late, they receive an alert from 007 about the situation and attempt to flee. Victoria reveals her true nature. Moneypenny threatens to kill M instead of letting him be captured, but Hunt distracts her and Moneypenny is shot in the shoulder while the minister is promptly executed. Hunt wants to coerce M to follow her plan, start an arms race that will make her rich, but also ensure a certain rebirth of the British Empire. Bond boards the British submarine HMS Vengeance as it's heading towards Blackernog, but Hunt overrides the control of the Vengeance and launches a nuke to wipe out London. Then Hunt destroys the Vengeance and also fires the commando unit heading towards her, killing almost everyone aboard the boats, except one man. Actually, it's just Jane Bond. He escapes. 007 infiltrates the Kranach, manages to get control of the Hammerhead gun, access systems, and destroys the nuke heading to London, then uses it to cause catastrophic damage to Black Kranach. Bond, Moneypenny, and M manage to escape while Victoria Hunt herself perishes in the flames. In the end, the destruction of the nuke, the destruction of the Black Kranach, and the Vengeance are all covered up. The remaining assets of Hunt Engineering are nationalized. England is safe as 007 enjoys a cigarette while overlooking the Union Jack flag. So that's Hammerhead.
That's Hammerhead.
Yeah, you're going to have fun editing that into a rap song.
It sounded like a rap song. This is the third story from our friends at Dynamite Entertainment.
I don't even remember who and drew and wrote that. Can you?
This is Andy Diggle is the writer. Luca Casalanguida, colors from Chris Blythe, letters Simon Boland. Francesco Francavilla was the collection cover artist, and Jeff Harkins, the collection designer.
Yeah, I think he wrote for Green Arrow. I think the character of Diggle is actually named after him. Not entirely certain. There's a character named Diggle, but yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I have to say, like, thank you guys. I really enjoyed. You know, we weren't cold to Varger and Eidolon, but we both mentioned that we kind of enjoyed.
We teased that there may be other graphic novel adventures that we would review in the future that we perhaps enjoyed more. This is one of those books. It is essentially, as far as I'm concerned, it is a marriage between the Bond of Fleming's world, because again, this is supposed to be the Bond after the books we've just finished reviewing.
Yes.
Although a modern version of those stories, I guess. I know they've done Casino Royale circa 1953. What's their Casino Royale? Like, yeah, that'd be interesting. What's their Live and Let Die? What's their Moonraker? They're not going to do it because they're doing it circa Fleming's time, but I kind of want them to do it circa 21st century.
How do you adapt those books for a modern setting? That's a challenge.
That'd be interesting. Anyways, that being said, I find that Hammerhead, and they do another one after this, which I'm sure we'll review in a few months' time, Kill Chain. I find their style, the Casalanguida and Andy Diggle style, is more, well, what's awesome about Fleming? And what's awesome about the films? Let's marry them and put them together. Whereas Eidolon and Varger were good. I like them. It was a nice start. It was a promising start. It certainly was. It stayed maybe a bit truer to Fleming, even was maybe a little bit excessive at times. Like, Bond is basically a serial killer in those two books.
He's really a jerk.
Whereas here, there are one or two moments I'm like, yeah, you know what? The movie Bond would behave like that. Although there's still a lot of the Fleming Bond in here. So, you know, it's one of those things where, like, Dynamite Entertainment maybe commissioned Diggle and Casalanguida to make a Bond, a version of James Bond in the comics where they could have their cake and eat it too, which some people might not like, but I actually think that's awesome. You know, it's I think it's a perfect marriage.
Yeah, no, I really like this book. I mean, what I enjoyed is, yes, there's the Fleming elements, but there's movie Bond elements, but from so many parts they picked and choose. Because I mean, the obvious ones, I mean, I've just read the synopsis. The obvious one is the world is not enough. It's clearly the plot. But another one is really there's elements of For Your Eyes Only. With
it's like For Your Eyes Only turning into the world is not enough, because you have a beautiful young woman who's strong headed, who sees the assassination of her family, vows revenge. So it's like Melina, who's actually been Elektra all this time.
And the first time I read it as single issues. So the first time I read it, I was like, oh, she's probably she's not gonna be the bad guy, because I actually believed her, that she was a good guy. But
that's the thing. We've been reading the novels for when you read a book, you have to rely on what the author wants to describe or chooses to omit. When you have a film, you have script, acting, and the visual of the acting. It's sort of the same in a graphic novel, but it's not in motion. So it's the image. Mm-hmm. What has the artist drawn in this image? So it's easier to be fooled, I find. I didn't think she was going to be the villain either. I was surprised when she turned out to be the villain. I thought the fox was the villain. Al-Fakr, the fox. Yeah. I was like, oh, I didn't see that coming. It's actually Victoria Hunt, or Tori, as her friends like to call her.
Yeah. I liked it. So you can find us at the James Bond.
So, you know, if we tend to do these things in chronological order, we sort of have our pre-title sequence is the, what's it called? The Torre de David? David's Tower?
It is. I have it in my notes. El Torre de David, the vertical slum. And basically what this is, it's an apartment complex that was they began building it in 1990, but because of the Venezuelan banking crisis of the early 90s, they stopped building it, and it has been left there for since then. It's just an incomplete building, and people use it. It's a slum. It's like a...
How tall is it, does it say?
I didn't get that information.
Yeah, certainly that
it was due to be damaged. It was damaged during the earthquakes last August. Oh. But apparently it's still, as far as I know in my research, it's still standing. But I like the idea, because it's sort of the story has elements where the villain is obviously old English money. And people blame the rich for, like, thematically it works for the story, and they start there at sort of a failing of capitalism, because the villain of this story is capitalism and living capitalism embodied in the person of Victoria Hunt herself.
Well, not only that, but it's also there's a line she says something about, like, making Britain great again, which I didn't pick up on the first time I read the book. Although I was looking at its publication, it was published, like, I think as that election was maybe finishing, so they must have been paying attention to that, because for her to say let's make Britain great again, it's like, okay. But you know, there's also, but you know, setting aside real world politics, which I have absolutely no interest getting into on a James Bond complex, for the purpose of our story, for the purpose of our review here, it is, you know, the British Empire was so grandiose. You know, the sun never set on the British Empire at one point, and obviously that is not even close to being the case anymore, nor has it been close to being the case for about 50 or 60 years at this point. And you have this character that still wants to hold on to those vestiges of the British Empire of the past. And lo and behold, she is the heir to a extraordinarily powerful and influential armaments institution, but a corporation. Company, a producer, manufacturer. That was what I meant to say. So it's a dangerous mix. You have born into money, born with a silver spoon in her mouth, very an antiquated and nationalistic sense of patriotism. I'll emphasize that because liking your country is like fine, but she's like really nationalistic. And she makes weapons, so it's like the worst cocktail.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
But she is great. I mean, I've read the book. I know how it ends, but, you know, they could bring that character back. A few scars or anything, I'd love her to come. I liked her. I love the fact that her only mistake is screwing James Bond. That's her only mistake. Yeah. Everything that she set up would have worked, but she screwed James Bond.
Well, it tends to be their one mistake when the villains, well, there aren't very many villains that have screwed James Bond, but that's one example, but or just not doing enough to kill him. Like, I don't know, Costco of hiring Bond to protect. Why did you hire him? You know, that review's already out, but no, this is another example. It's that one mistake. You should have killed him when you had the chance. I guess maybe you couldn't really kill him because that would have put maybe MI6 onto her, possibly, but I do like the plot of, we were talking before we hit record earlier today, I was saying that, you know, in rereading this, because I hadn't read it since I bought it.
No, same.
I reread it this week, obviously, for the purpose of this week's review, or whenever this is released, and there were some details I hadn't picked up on, like when Tori and Bond meet in Dubai, she shows off Hammerhead. There's a display of Hammerhead at this weapons convention. Mm-hmm. And he asks, oh, that's interesting. That's like an insanely powerful weapon. Can it like hold a nuclear device? And she says, well, no, that's against our, you know, the anti-nuclear proliferation convention. And I didn't really think much of that until the end, of, I think, believe of the second or third issue. It's just after her father is assassinated. And the helicopter goes down in the last panel of that is a nuclear arms in this helicopter, which itself goes back to the M scene where Trident, which I guess is the name for the nuclear defense system in England, is being decommissioned, and Hunt manufacturer is replacing it. So like I think the first time I read it, I sort of just enjoyed the art so much because I think Castellanguida is my favorite so far of the artists, and I'm including the ones we will read later in the months to come. I think he's my favorite. So I was just enjoying the art. I was enjoying the interpretation of Bond. I was enjoying the villain, the Fox, and just how it felt like, oh, this is like Fleming. Oh, that's like the movie. Oh, this is like Fleming. Oh, that's like the movie. I think I was just enjoying that. But now that I've paid attention to the plot, it's actually very cleverly constructed.
No, it's, you know, Varga and Eidlen, as much as I enjoyed them, I don't think would have been good. It would have been weird to adapt those as movies, but this
would make an awesome movie.
Just hire a filmmaker, an actor, and get going. This is ready to shoot. You got your template. There's not much to add. You don't need to add a needless third wheel nuclear physicist at the third act that needs to defuse a nuclear bomb. This is ready to go. You don't need to. It's perfect the way it is.
I'm wondering if, as a movie, the fan community would point out, but in a negative light, what you mentioned earlier. There's a lot of the world is not enough in this. Because there is a lot of the world is not enough in
this. Yeah, there is, but it's, I mean,
she kills, doesn't Elektra plan the assassination of this king?
You know, we should do The World Is Not Enough next.
Next time, maybe. But that should have been maybe our first Brosnan pairing it up. The book would have been this, and the film would have been The World Is Not Enough. Colonel Sun would still work, though.
Yeah.
Colonel Sun would probably pair those two. But, or Spectre, Hooker, whatever. That's not the point of this review. This is Hammerhead.
There's a love twin in it, but I feel with the proper casting, and it's been done in the past. Other Bond movies have echoed they did Moonraker, The Spy and Love, they are basically in the same movie, and they did them back to back. So I don't think it would rock.
Probably not.
Instead of her dad, make it Geraldine. then there you go. It's a completely different thing.
Yeah, she's the next CEO in line or something like that, whatever, you know. That would be kind of awesome. And I think I was thinking about who could play her, and it's not a super well-known actress, but like Kirk's would-be girlfriend in like Into Darkness, whatever her name is, Alice Eve or something like that.
Oh, I love that actress.
She'd be really good as Victoria Hunt.
Oh, yeah. I've seen her in other things, and it's an actress that comes, like, I don't know if she's a nasty person in life, but on screen, when you see her, she looks like she's a genuinely fun person to be around. She just, she exudes like, oh, you're the type of girl that I'd love to, like, I wouldn't mind showing, bringing home.
That's
like,
who you bring home to show to your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, but I think she's a good actress. She has range. And I think that's sort of who I had.
That's what you need for Victoria Hunt, because she needs to look, oh, you're a nice girl, like, you can present to you.
But well, she turns. No, from off the. I didn't get that vibe from her we don't know she's the villain yet, but she's not a sweetheart.
No, she's not a sweetheart.
Career woman. She's very demanding, and she's an arms dealer. Like, let's not kid around.
She's not. I won't compare it, but she's not cold. She doesn't.
No.
She looks sassy.
Yeah.
And competent. That's what I say. Like but the thing is that Alice Eve, just what she brings up, you wouldn't think of her as a villain.
Mm.
And Sophie Marceau, she was a little bit more mature, but she gives off a vibe that
being
is
a bad person.
Not a bad person. No, but a more complex, more. Mm. Darker than Alice Eve doesn't register as dark or evil.
Hence why it'd be awesome when she reveals.
Flips it. Yeah, that's why.
This is all my doing.
That's why I think it's a great
Take
idea.
Them away. I think it would really, really work.
Yeah, it would work. I don't know if she tall she is, but you don't need a statuesque
fine.
6 foot blonde to play that role. But yeah, no.
That's fine. We also get a tricked out. We don't spend much time with it, but we get a tricked out car. Again, that marriage between Fleming and the film. Fleming to the films and everything in between. This is the between.
But I love that they flip it. They flip the script on the supercar. Bond has to take his own. Like, that's why I wrote it this way in my synopsis. He has to take down his supercar. I don't know why they haven't done that in the movies yet. It's
such weird.
A simple idea, but it's great. It's such a great idea.
I mean, nobody has a more dangerous vehicle than James Bond.
Maybe
what if
Batman.
He has to survive his own? That's true, Batman. That's the Batmobile probably is better than any Aston Martin. But in I'm a Batman fan too, and yes, the Batmobile is probably better equipped than any of the Astons we've seen so far. But imagine Bond having to face his own
weapons.
It's like that Stephen King movie. Well, the cars become.
Oh my God, that's such a horrible.
But movie. In Jen's Bond.
Okay, a little bit better than that, but it would make for a captivating sequence. It's such a simple, brilliant idea. Turn the gadget against Bond.
There's still a little bit of the Varger Eidolon vibe at times, like when he, when they're in the tank, he shoots the tank, and there's water around that the sharks are coming. He's like, "Give me a name, Charybdis," and he just. Lets the shark eat him, and then he says, "Bon appetit."
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it.
I know. I'm sure you did. I liked it too. I'm just saying. All I'm saying is that it's a bit of the nastiness.
It's really nasty.
It's really nasty.
It's super
or
cruel.
When he goes to the safe house, he shoots one accidentally. He doesn't want to shoot the other one. And he's like, "Okay, let me try to figure out what this password is." He looks at one as well. "You'll be no help." The guy's like dead with a bullet in his brain.
It's dark humor. I love it.
Very dark humor. That's stuff that Timothy Dalton would say. Doesn't he say "Bon appetit"?
He says it in License to Kill to the guy
the maggots
gets eaten
or whatever. Away. Yeah. But so they do flip the cube, not the cube branch scene, but the Bond car scene on its head, which is pretty cool, and. We get to meet sort of our Karen Bay. Draco.
We kind of skipped a lot of things because he gets chastised by M.
Oh, yeah. We're not really going in chronological order all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But so chastised by M because it was quite simple. It was to I guess, intercept the group of people he kills in Venezuela are like downloading information, or they're uploading information Kraken.
Yeah, they're working for Kraken. It's very nebulous and not
information.
Very, yeah,
as Roger Moore would say,
information.
You know, so get the information. Don't let these dudes hand it over to Kraken. That apparently fails. So he's being chastised for that and sent to the pound, to the doghouse, because
they've been chasing Kraken for a while.
Yes, they know of Kraken. As this story begins, Kraken is already a known. We don't know his or her identity, but we know this is they're a villain. They are a pre-existing villain in this universe.
Something. So they send him to. Is he supposed to protect them? He's not them there as a bodyguard.
No, well, sort of.
But he's basically sent to Dubai to.
I think the idea is that Kraken is trying to download information that has to do the information that Bond was trying to intercept has to do with Hunt Engineering. Hunt Engineering is present at the Dubai. IDEX. They're at IDEX, and they have also been commissioned.
I have a brochure if you want to read it.
Oh, thank you.
It's available at IDEXUAE.AE.
So, I love this. Here's a description of the event. IDEX is a very, very important show, an exhibition for us. It is actually the reflection of our industrial defense capabilities. This growth has been immense, but you know what? If we hadn't had a platform like IDEX to bring all those technologies together in the beginning and showcase our capabilities, we wouldn't be here today to talk about being the biggest defense industry company in the Middle East, and you want to show it here at IDEX. Homaid El Shemari. And yeah, we have some pictures of some fighter jets, some pictures of some tank. It's a pretty big expo, though. It's a pretty big room.
It's a little bit macabre, I find.
Well, I mean, look, the governments, you know, and this includes the Canadian government, they subcontract these things. Like, the government doesn't make tanks. Private corporations make tanks. Private corporations have to sell them to people who are the most obvious customers, countries who need to defend their borders. Ain't get into the politics of what's right or wrong. But that's how it works. And they're showing off their stuff. This is their Comic-Con.
Yeah, I know. That's basically it.
That's what
it's
it is.
It's a Comic-Con for guns.
And tanks and missiles and electromagnetic rail guns and anti-aircraft missile launchers.
I was doing my research as always. I'm looking at these things and the FX rounds like that Bond mentions.
No, she mentioned. Did she mention?
No,
show?
He mentioned.
Oh, yeah, I think he notices them.
Yeah, when Hunt gets his brain splatter all over him, like he gets a hold of the.
It's a Hunt technology gun.
And he says, "Oh, Apex Run." And I had to. It's an acronym, and it's not. I don't even know if it's a real thing, because the only reference I found was for something called AFE guns, and it's basically armored piercing ammunition, or anyway, and the X, the only times I was able to find Apex, the only ones I found for Apex were for Dungeons and Dragons type of RPGs that they have, and it's for the X, if I understood correctly, was for explosive. So I don't think it's an actual like Apex rounds are something, but the Apex round, I don't know what these are. I really.
There's another one. This is before the assassination.
Oh, it's high explosive. Sorry, okay. It is armored piercing high explosive.
There you go. High
explosive.
Okay.
There's AP rounds, APC, so it's armor-piercing capped, armor-piercing ballistic capped. There's so much stuff I did not need to know about guns and bullets.
Well, in case you ever show up at the at IDEX.
Yeah, I'll be able to ask a few questions. Can I get the Apex? Can I get some Apex here?
There's also, I mean, this has no absolutely no bearing on the plot, but I thought it was really cool. I'm not the research man. I'm too lazy for it. But before the assassination attempt, like, she's showing off a bit of their technology, and she mentioned something about an armor that's based off of, like, spider's silk?
Yeah.
Spider thread? That's kind of like it. So it's light, but somehow durable.
That's an actual thing.
Oh, that's an actual thing. Yeah, yeah, I was wondering if that's an actual thing or not. I would like to think that, whether it's in novel form or in graphic novel form, that the people that have taken over the mantle from Ian Fleming, like Fleming, did a bit of research. So I was like, I wonder if that's a real thing.
I was surprised how much work went into making that book, because the aquarium they have their fights in, it's completely real.
Yeah,
it is.
I'm not surprised it's real.
It's yeah. Let me show you the pictures. I grabbed a few screen grabs from the website.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Dubai Aquarium. There's the corridor, the same thing with the corridor. I don't know if they have sharks. I don't think that's a great white shark, because these tend to die while in captivity. They've never been able to keep white sharks long in captivity. After a few days, they let themselves die. Basically,
yeah, yeah.
That's quite sad. So I don't think that's a. So it's the DubaiAquarium.com. If you're interested in visiting the website, it looks super cool.
Oh, they're always building crazy things in Dubai. They have the money for it. They're like, well, don't they have the tallest building in the world? Like the Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol building. It's like awesome looking building. But I actually know someone who went to Dubai recently to move there to live. Well, found a job. Why else would you go there, I guess?
Bond and Victoria get drinks together. They flirt a lot, and their flirtation is based on, like, the
physical attraction.
No, but they talk about their view of England. That's where you get the both character motivation. The first time I read it, it completely escaped my grasp. I didn't notice that she was basically telling. Yeah, how she sees the world and motivates her.
Oh, it's
Bond.
It's fairly obvious. And that's where you can tell that she's very much, which is funny because we don't see her father very much. So maybe her father, in a more like happy-go-like, jovial manner, shared the same thoughts. But so we don't know where she gets this from. But it's quite clear that she's read her history. She's very well aware that the Brits were quite influential for several decades, and she would very much like to see that happen again.
And she blames politicians.
And the bleeding heart liberals and this and that, which again does sort of fall into the parameters of the political landscape. I guess you would say that we're living right now. Maybe less so in Canada, where we're maybe a little bit more, you know, in the gray area, where it's like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But there are other areas in the world where it's like, wow, you guys are really seeing things in black and white. Like, it's kind of scary how you are seeing things in black and white. Not naming anybody. No countries mentioned.
No countries mentioned or arm in the making of this podcast.
Right. No egos were bruised in the making of this podcast. But again, the point being, she is definitely, I guess, what you would call an imperialist.
Yes.
And Bond is... Again, Bond never gets political, nor should he. But he does.
But he blames the overextension of the British Empire itself. They try to go through too big.
I guess Bond is more analytical. It's like, well, we could have had it, but we didn't, and we were stupid about it. Because here's why: but we could have had it.
Blames corporate greed, basically. Because I mean, I've been reading a lot on. The Indian Tea Company. The overextension of that company sort of led the way for the British Empire to be too big to be able to defend its territories and eventually lose them. So basically, that's Bond blames greed for the fall of the British Empire, and she blames politicians. So they see the problem and they identify two different.
Neither of them are particularly. Wrong, but neither point of view tells the whole story.
Exactly.
And each point of view is kind of missing elements of the other point of view to tell the whole story.
Exactly.
Which makes them sort of an interesting pairing.
Yeah.
No, or not.
I, kind of wish it worked out. Maybe don't blow up the thing.
Well, I don't know. There's a panel late there. You said, oh, they should bring the character back. Just give her a couple of scars. There's a panel late there. It's like, I think she's a skeleton now.
But I like the... Okay. Oh, by the way, I got to mention, Gerard Hunt is clearly inspired my favorite actor that played Alfred Pennyworth. That's clearly Michael Caine going for Gerard Hunt.
Yeah. Hey, get your hands off my daughter.
I was the size of a tangerine.
The look on your face. That's all right. I'm talking like an Australian now. Forget it. He's now an old George Lazenby.
Maybe he could play a Gerard Hunt.
There you go. Let's make that movie. Bring him back. There's your code name theory for you. Bring back the actor that played James Bond.
Yeah. I love the sequence where, after Gerard Hunt gets his brains blown up.
Pretty much.
They are being chased by the assassin, but Bond and Victoria are both, and that's what I like about her. She grabs a gun and she's there. She's not like some damsel in distress. I thought that was kind of cool.
Again, it's her introduction, that first panel where she's looking fine as F and she says, billions and billions of dollars. Everybody's scrambling for these weapons, but the only thing that offends them is that it's a woman selling to them. When that image of her, which is a great image, they certainly make her look like, I guess, as sexy as a 2D like character could be. They make her look as sexy as possible, and that big statement, and she's an arms dealer. When she picks up that gun and is in like pistol wielding mode, I'm like, of course she's in pistol wielding mode. She sells guns. It's like she's ready for action, although she's ready for a different kind of action, as we learned, but we don't know this at this point.
Yeah,
she's like ready for action. She's gonna shoot to kill. She has to, So yeah, it was cool, but like it wasn't surprising. It wasn't like she's the CEO of a company that makes guns. Big guns. This is a little gun. I'm sure she can handle that one.
And I love that there's a shark that eats like when I first bought those books in Pittsburgh, there was a sale going on Comixology, and the image was just, I think it's one of the covers with sharks and
I have this, I think there's somewhere in there, I have the singles, yeah, but that was the cover of
they used that as a marketing web page on their web page. It was sort of the image they used. I'm like, oh my god, I gotta read this. Bond versus sharks. I gotta read this. He doesn't fight a shark, obviously.
No, he feeds the shark.
He feeds the shark, and it's awesome. It's so cruel. Mm-hmm. But he gets his clue, and
well, I do like how the second or third issue ends. When you read them in the hardcover, it's not like, yeah, no, you don't have to be what? A gentleman. And then they make passionate love.
Yeah. He goes to... what is it when the Mile High Club...
Afternoon delight. Any pop. Higher and my ears will pop. So, we land somewhere. I'm not sure where they are. Are they in... He goes to Yemen.
I'm not sure
where she's bugging. Oh, no. She's going to Black...
Black Cranog.
I could say Black Rock. Black Cranog.
And Black, like, there's a few things that are actually real in this book, and Black Cranog
is in Scotland, right?
Yeah, it's in Scotland. It's it's between Scotland and Ireland. It's one of those little,
it's like an island. Artificial island or something like that, is it?
No, but it's kind of like a oil platform. So, so that's where she goes, and Bond goes to Yemen with his supercar and tries to get information at the terrorist mercenary safe house.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work because he shoots both guys
dead. I do like the gag about him accidentally shooting one of them. It's like, shit. I didn't get the information I wanted. Although he remembers the dinner with the shark. So
dinners. Oh, that dinner with the shark. That's almost sounds
Bond 25.
No, that sounds like a title from a Fleming chapter. Dinner with the shark.
That could have been the Live and Let Die chapter. Yeah, or the License to Kill chapter.
I know that chapter. It's titled. It's
Lightning Does Strike Twice. Yeah. Or something like that. We'll get there when we get there. If we ever do, I have no idea if we'll read the novelization. It's the kill. But
you know what? We'll figure out. If I don't know if we are. So it gains access to the files, but he doesn't get much. All he gets is the information regarding the smuggling of what he deduces eventually that is the nuke that has been stolen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's the only information. And before he's able to intercept the mercenary that's smuggling his cargo's Terminator on him. Ejects him almost. Does it eject him? Because he gets thrown off the car.
I think he just jumps out. I don't know. Just tosses him out.
Yeah.
Because there's gas. I think there's gas like pouring in the car. Yeah, smoke. Right. So he doesn't want to suffocate or get poisoned. So I'm out of here. But the car is being remote controlled by Fucker. Wait, that didn't come out right. And I didn't even intend it to say
Is it
like
Malfakar that drives the car? Or is it...
That's what I said. Malfucker.
Yeah. But is it him that's driving or...
No, they're controlling it remotely.
I thought it was Victoria.
And they're doing it because of a little thingamajig. Got it. Victoria is using the Fox and his freedom files to
criminal steal. Organization.
Sure, Victoria. They're in partnership. Although they're in partnership with Kraken. They don't know who Kraken is. Victoria Hunt is Kraken. Once they've helped her get the nukes, she's going to kill them. She's going to kill them. They have a little bit of Victoria Engineering. That'd be awesome. Once Victoria's Secret shuts down, Victoria Engineering. They have a little bit of Hunt Engineering that they use to control the car because Bond brings it up when he goes on the sub to say, watch out because your sub has been re-engineered with Hunt technology so it can be remotely controlled. Those two things are linked. When he warns his old buddy, his old naval buddy about watch out, your shit might be remote controlled because he's lived it. They remote controlled his car. Because Hunt is... It all ties in. Hunt is commissioned to take care of the nuclear disarmament of Britain's defense systems. Hunt Engineering is also supplying Q-Branch, hence the ability to remote control the Aston or whatever car it is it's supposed to be.
Is it Malfakar? Or is it Victoria that's driving the car? I always figured it was Victoria Hunt herself trying to kill Bond, not Malfakar.
The book makes it look like Malfakar.
You know what? We'll try and reach out to the authors online, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, I read it this week. I don't understand. See, Bond... See, the Aston... I'm just going to say the Aston. The car has flipped over. It's in flames. Bond crouches. He yanks something from the controls. It's a chip. Then he goes, car trouble, mind of its own. Ha, that's very good. And they tranquilize him. Well, they don't, you know what, they don't actually say.
You know what, they would, no, it's not him. It's Victoria Hunt. Mm. Our aunt wants him dead. Malfakar keeps him alive. If you wanted him dead, he would have shot him there. So Malfakar doesn't want Bond dead.
Yes, because in the next issue, Malfakar says, you know, I don't mind dealing cigarettes and this and that, but this stuff is dangerous. I don't do this. Once I was told to do this, I started to mistrust Kraken, and Kraken told me to kill you, but I'm not going to do that because now I'm not sure about this Kraken character. It makes, you have to like think about it for a little bit, but it does make sense. So it does make sense.
Victoria's driving the car.
Yeah. There you go. Maybe they were just sent to make sure he was dead or something like
that. That's why Bond wants to kill her. She drove his car without his consent. That's why.
You might say she drove him over the edge.
Oh, you're the king. Long live the king of puns.
One of the many reasons why Roger's my favorite. I can do this all day. But yes, so this makes so an uneasy alliance between Alfakar and Bond, who now have, again, I think I used it in the Living Daylights episode of last week or whatever, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. There seems to be a lot of my enemy is my friend the last few episodes, but here's another example. And they're going to team up. Bond has deduced that Kraken You know who he is, not him. Her. I can't remember if that's how the issue ends, but...
Oh, she doesn't have a mask. It's going to make it reveal.
Doesn't she have a mask? Her beauty and innocence. Revealed, she is the demon. She is Lucifer. She's the princess of... princess of punishment?
No, you can think of better.
She's the Duchess of Destruction.
Ooh. See, I told you could think of something better. Bond and Malfoy decide to disassemble the nuke that he's... Like, they realize he's smuggling a nuke. Mm.
Supplies.
And it's empty.
Mm-hmm.
This is where, like, the comparison with the world is not enough is becoming a little bit stronger.
Yes, because there's a scene. That's not what I watched. Again, I as I mentioned in an episode that recorded earlier today, I'm trying to hold off on the ones we haven't reviewed yet, so I haven't seen it in a couple of years. But I do remember there's something about a bomb going off, but that didn't have its true nuclear like armament on it. But everybody thinks it does, so they think Bond and Christmas Jones are dead or something like that. Yeah.
But let me ask you, the nuclear elements have been removed from that warhead, but Victor Hunt doesn't use that nuke to launch at London. She ends up hacking the USS Vengeance and using the Vengeance.
So where's that nuke?
So I'm like, where's the nuclear? Like, if I was writing a sequel, that this is where I'd start.
Bound on now, and you know, gun barrel, boom, blood drums that, and it just opens on this nuke flying. That's the pre-title sequence. The end of Hammerhead.
Yeah, it's kind of like Superman 2. Superman's 2 starts with the end of Superman 1.
Yeah, it's true. I haven't watched that in a while, but I remember that.
The new cut, the director. Anyway, but yeah, no, it's a plot hole because you'd never find out where it is that nuclear material.
Yeah, she does use a nuclear missile that's already on another sub to attack London.
So, I mean...
Oops, nuclear missiles are missing somewhere. That hopefully no bad guys find
it. Entire plot was to turn Malfakar into a fall guy. Yeah. That was... but
sacrificial still. Lamb, really.
Yeah.
She used her... she used her. She used Malfakar under the guise of Kraken in a partnership. What she's... And once their usefulness is outdated, well, let's get rid of them.
Ciao.
Yeah.
So... There's a missing... The missing plutonium. Plutonium has never been found.
And it's not brought up in Kill Chain, so we need to hire Diggle and Casalanguida for a third book.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we will never be satisfied.
Exactly. I need to know, where's my nuke? Where's the nuke? Where's the nuke? So they found out that it's empty. They infiltrate another boat, the Bodis, before going to the Vengeance. And the Bodis, it's not clear because it's a British ship, but it's whoever is the captain, it seems to be in cahoots with Victoria Hunt herself.
Is this on? Yeah, right. It's true because this is one thing where I got tripped up a little bit. I got confused who was in the command center at Black Cranog and who's in this sub. But yes, I think you're right. There is somebody that clearly is working with Victoria Hunt to the extent that, you want me to fire a nuclear missile? Okay, ma'am. I don't know. I'm not sure who that person is, but yes, someone is clearly under her direct orders. No questions asked. Clearly. I'm not sure what that is about.
And it's never clear what they do. They stop them, but I mean, would they? Do they tie the all the Marines and wait for Batman to show up and get them to jail? Like,
oh, you just send them to Ocean Prison.
Oh, exactly. It's plot hole. It's not too bad. I mean, I love the entire everything with M and Moneypenny and Hunt and even the
Ministry of Defense.
He's such a loser. But it's, he dies like, it's so brutal. She just, she hates him. Yeah. M and Moneypenny, she doesn't hate him.
Barely tolerates.
She barely tolerates, but him, she just, we're in this because of you. Blammo!
Yeah, well, he's one of those wishy-washy, bleeding heart. I don't know if bleeding heart liberal actually comes off a bit of he comes off a bit more anal retentive than bleeding heart liberal, but she's not a fan of the politicians, which, in fairness, M and obviously Moneypenny are not politicians. They're state employees. They're not politicians. Whereas this minister he's just going to do anything to get some votes. And she's like, nish, nish, you're part of the problem.
And I love
that. Bye-byes.
I love that she taunts Moneypenny with...
Very nasty. Which, again, I guess that's Bond and they still haven't... that's another bonus episode.
Have they done it or haven't they? We'll never find out.
She reacts... Moneypenny's reaction to the taunting of Moneypenny. All those years with Bond and you've never really... You don't know what you're missing. Like, Moneypenny really doesn't like... Would she have reacted the way she does if she had slept with Bond? I'm not so sure.
Would she have... She slept with... I read it the entire way. She slept in Bond with Bond and she's kind of embarrassed by that because the villain fucked, screwed with Bond too. So it's like, you...
That's how you read that. I read it the other way around. The villain, the villainous, the Duchess of Destruction got a chance to sleep.
I love that you call her like that.
She got a chance to sleep with Bond, and now she's like, you've had so many years. Oh, because now I'm going to imprison you, and you'll never get out of here alive. You've had all these opportunities to sleep with him, and you never did it. You don't know what you're missing, girl. And Moneypenny's like, that's enough from you, you B-I-T-C-H? That's how I read it. You read it the other way around.
Yeah, I read it the other
Interesting.
Way.
I she, never read it like that. I think both work.
Yeah, both work.
Interesting.
It's a clever piece of writing. Mm-hmm. But I love their interaction. I love that when they get the message and like they threaten to basically kidnap Anne. She's like, F this. I'm going to blow his... freaking brains all over the place. And
M says something like, we're going to have to talk about this during your next employee review.
I love that. That's perfect for a movie. That is perfect for a movie. Like the entire, you give enough for the actors to warrant them being on the screen without overshadowing Bond. They just had flavor. It's perfect.
Yeah.
You don't need the Miss Moneypenny show or the M show or the Q show. This is perfect.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I
love this book.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And so then, she gets shot in the arm. Well, I've got two women here, which is rare in a Bond scene. But Tori has one of her goons, guards, shoot Moneypenny. So she's out of commission and they're both sent to some sort of prisoner bay of some sort.
Yep. This is where I'm not... following her because she is basically trying to convince M to... So, yeah, she tries to coerce M into following her plot, which is, if I understood, she wants to sell... Or, like, she wants to use the destruction of London as a way of...
making their allies...
order more of hammerhead weapons, I guess.
But since they can remotely control them, if they don't fall in line with British interests, she'll just turn the guns on them.
Because they
it's kind of crazy.
It is really crazy.
Why don't you destroy one of your allies and just keep hammerheads on British soil? Because she doesn't like the reason is because she doesn't like the politicians. But even then, there's a little bit, well, that's... Like, this was all making sense until you said that. Now you're just cray-cray. Like, everything was for a bad guy's plot, this was making sense. Now you're just talking like a crazy person. Like,
you need to put a...
Take a chill pill.
A crazy person app.
Yeah. Well, even the art, it's great. Because although the revelation doesn't come immediately at Black Cranog, she's dressed And I find drawn very particularly in the second half of the book when they reach Black Crannog. In the first few chapters, she seems a bit lighter. She seems a bit more innocent or something like that. Whereas at Black Crannog, she has like this burgundy one piece on her. And she has like extra mascara. I mean, we're talking about a drawing here, but she has like extra mascara on her.
You know, her lipstick goes from like pink to like dark red.
Yeah. They make her like villainy.
It's subtle, but they make her look evil.
Yeah. She's like a sexy Rosa Klebb.
Yeah, sexy Rosa Klebb. Ooh.
I'm sorry, did I say sexy? I meant to say, I'm so sorry. Allow me to correct myself. A sexier Rosa Klebb.
But they do make an attempt to make her look evil.
Yeah. There's like more shadow on her face or something like that. I don't know.
There's more pointy.
I think she is a little pointy in there. She's trying to make a point.
She looks more angular. And we go to the HMS Vengeance. And I had a bunch of things on the HMS Vengeance here. It was launched in September 1998 and commissioned in November 1999. This boat and the Vanguard are the only fully operational submarine that carry 200 warheads. That's a lot of nukes. Mm. Oh, and the Vengeance carries unopened last instructions, letters of last resort, and that I found chilling. It's in the event that the entire like British England is destroyed, what do you do with their remaining assets, which is a boat? Well, you send that letter contains the last wishes of the Prime Minister, and when there's an election, they never open them. They destroy
right,
them.
New Prime Minister.
So. And it's very British. When I read them, I'm like, oh, that's so British. Mm. Like, I don't know if the Americans have something similar, but this is perfectly.
Well, I'm sure
British.
The president has like these really bizarre. As the commander in chief, I'm sure they have some really like what anybody off the street would think of, like complete whack job privileges, but it's like you never know what's gonna happen. So let's just do this letter just in case, as bizarre as it sounds. You never know what's gonna happen. There are dirty bombs and nuclear bombs out there. And, you know.
Yep. So
Bond meets up with an old friend.
Old friend. What's his name again? I forgot his name.
Don't remember. But they seem to be pretty chummy.
Yeah, I don't
Sam have... Smith?
Joe Army? I don't know. I don't know.
That's right. Joe Army.
He's captain, though. He progressed. Mm. But I loved when...
Well, we know why he got the rank of captain.
Because he stayed.
No, because he didn't have to compete with the great James Bond.
But I love when he asked him why he left the Navy. Quite honestly, the food. I'm like...
It's a very Bond reply.
And I realize this version of Bond has not lived during World War II, has not lived during the ration period. So this version of James Bond is just a foodie.
Hmm.
A modern day foodie. It's just like food. He probably listens to like cooking shows and stuff.
I guess I like to think in the last like 10 years, what have the Brits partaken in? Were they in Iraq? They were in Afghanistan.
They were in Afghanistan.
Yeah, in my mind, like Bond was in Afghanistan or something like that. You know, he's done something.
Oh, he's done obviously, but I mean, the rationing is an effect of World War II, and that's why the Fleming books were one of the aspects because they didn't have food, but modern like doesn't exist anymore. So where does he get his passion for food? Good food.
Well, I would say there's. In our day and age, there's I won't say more varieties. There's always been variety in food, but the said variety of food is much more accessible because travel is
much
more accessible.
You just solved it for me. He travels. Yeah. That's where your gut is.
You're on a freaking Navy ship.
Yeah, that's where.
Commander. Every pit stop. Yeah.
Damn, you just updated the character for the 21st century by accident for me.
Dynamite Entertainment, if you're listening, you can draw. We know you can draw. We know I can write.
I can draw, but I'm not at this level.
Ah, whatever. Whatevs.
And so we get to the Vengeance. Vengeance doesn't have a lot of life in it.
It gets electromagnetically blasted by... so we get a demonstration. Thank you for the demonstration of Hammerhead.
It's not really what a magnetic coil gun does, though. I've researched that. And it's basically just a magnet that shoots bullets very quickly. There's a movie in the 90s with Arnold Schwarzenegger, The Eraser, and the entire movie relates around a magnetic rail gun. Basically, it's just in the interior of the gun barrel is magnetic, and it makes the bullet go faster, if I understood. I'm paraphrasing, and people listening to this have better understanding. That's how I understood it.
It's all good, man. You've already understood it better than me. For me, it was just a ray gun.
It's not a ray gun. That's the thing. That's it's artistic license, but it's not a ray gun.
Ray guns are cool, though.
They're cool. That looks cooler than what I'm describing.
It's like the Predator. Everything he does is more like a hunter, but Predator sounds cooler.
Like a hunter.
So unfortunately the Vengeance, the HMS Vengeance is no more, and Bond and his what few friends he has left try to make it to Black Kranog, and even then the few friends he have left get themselves blasted into smithereens. So it's really only Bond that's left,
and Bond is you've seen First Blood Part 2.
It was a while ago, but yes, it's my least favorite of that franchise, actually.
You're crazy, but that's not my point. You know, it's that part of the movie when the girl gets killed and he goes on a rampage and he kills a lot of people. That's this version. Like, he's slashing people's throat.
Yeah,
it's brutal as hell.
Well, this is back to Eidolon Vargr material. I mean, remember when he infiltrates Korjak's ship or whatever the heck it is. I mean, he's just blowing everybody's
brains
out.
They're not doing the X-ray bullet in this book. I kind of missed it.
I guess that was like a Jason Masters speciality.
Yeah, that's probably is. But I kind of liked it.
It was cool. It was cool.
But it is a brutal, and he's just...
I sometimes wonder about those people that get their... You know, Bond walks up from behind a guard and slits the guard's throat. What if this guy is just like, he doesn't want to blow up England. He just needs a paycheck. He's got a wife and kids at home, and Bond just... I sometimes wonder those things. I know I shouldn't. That's right. Every single person at Black Kranog is an evil person.
Even evil people have families, but you know what? What is it from Star Trek 2? The fate of the many outweigh the
needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Or the one. Well, that's the case. You've got to slice some mofo's throat to get a hold of that space gun.
Could have knocked him out, but you want to make sure.
I want to make sure he doesn't start again.
So, here we go. Any climax.
Climax. Gets a hold of the gun. And I love he just throws the body away. It's kind of like a cartoon.
Well, I do. Like, he opens the hatch. The dude's like, what? Boom. You're out. That's pretty good. It's very quick, deadly.
Efficient.
Just like Bond.
And he gets a hold of the rail gun. At first, he's like, you can't do anything. We'll just get in. We'll kill you.
I kept that piece of garbage you used against my car.
I'm sure I can use it on your thingy-ma-ging, and she plugs it in, and
I'm gonna laser blast
you. Boom! Nukes the nuke.
Did you like it when I poked you earlier? I'm gonna poke you again.
And if it's a gun. It's a phallic object, and he's pointing it right at her. And the entire plot is her making herself a giant phallus to shoot things in order to create a new world. Basically, Bond aims his giant gun at her after having blown the nuke and shoots her.
That's right.
Like, he aims at her face. And, well, yeah, like you said, it looks like she doesn't survive, but I mean, who knows if it's really her in the skeleton that's screaming? Maybe it's somebody else.
But she has a wonderful flock of glowing blonde hair.
It's not hair, it's flames. Yeah, I know. They're not going to bring back that character.
Hey, I like the character too, trust me. And they certainly draw her to make it look as desirable as possible, but she's toast.
Yeah, unfortunately.
She's the villain. How can she not be toast?
But maybe for a sequel. It ends. Miss Moneypenny has her arm brace looks like something from
the first villain.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Did you read the Felix Leiter story?
Yes, I did.
His arm.
Yes.
Is and his from leg. The villain.
Yeah. From what's his name?
Kurjak.
Kurjak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that sort of in-world continuity. Yeah,
they're creating their own comic book universe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it ends and they're nationalizing the rest of the
Hunt engineering.
Yeah. And the everything's covered up and Bond has a cigarette outside the parliament and looks at the Union Jack.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. It's a really fun book to read.
It is. It's extremely well drawn. It's extremely well written. The characters are engaging, both the villains, the allies, Bond, M, Moneypenny, like everybody's. It felt like.
I want this team back.
They will come back.
No, I know, but.
But like, again, like a third book.
They should be on an ongoing. They should all only work on James Bond as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, what's going on right now, again, maybe we don't want to get into this now. Maybe we just want to wrap up Hammerhead. But briefly, the grapevine, I learned through the grapevine, and maybe it's not 100% accurate, but I learned through the grapevine that both the Bond origin, which at the time of this recording is at issue 4 or 5.
Something like that.
And the new modern Bond, apparently those are going to be like, hey, as long as they keep buying them, we're going to keep making them.
Fortunately, we'll be there for them. We'll
all absolutely. I'm quite happy with both. But those are two other bonuses for another time. Later especially on. If Bond Origin and the new one are just...
I don't think they're ongoing.
They can't possibly be ongoing. But I heard that because everything so far has been like a perfect little nicely packaged 6-issue arc. Apparently that is not the case with Bond Origin and this rebooted Bond, modern Bond. Yeah. Apparently they're going to push this. So I don't know. We'll see. But we have a lot of 6-issue arcs to go through before that.
Let me ask you a question. I don't know if you'll be able to answer that, but do you think we have... Do we know if we have people everywhere?
We do have people everywhere. Among other places, www.thejamesbondcomplex.com, which is also a Tumblr page. It just so happens. We also have our hosts. Everything starts at anchor.com. There's a Facebook page, which is always quite fun. Search for us at the James Bond Complex. There's a Twitter account, which is just as fun, at the Bond Complex. We're on Instagram for the visual artists there out there. Please visit our Instagram account. Search for at the James Bond Complex. We have, what else do we have? We're on YouTube. Maybe needs a little bit of updating, but we're on YouTube. Search for the James Bond Complex. We're on Google Play. Just Google it. If I can Google it, you can Google it. The listeners can Google it. And we're on iTunes, of course. Search for us. Subscribe. Write a wonderful review and give us a 5-star golden, shiny 5-star golden gun review. We're both on Twitter individually. I'm at 00pop. Those are the words OH_pop.
I'm at Matt Auclair with 2 T's.
I love it when you remind us of that. Just as James Bond always returns, so too will the James Bond Complex in something else.
In something else, which, I mean...
We have not decided at the time of this recording.
Yeah,
We have plans.
We have plans. In fact,
we might be doing one of them now. I just don't know which.
We'll figure it out in about 5 minutes.
But until then, toujours un plaisir. Merci, à la prochaine.
Bonne soirée. Au revoir.